Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome once again into the studio Chief of Police Lance Ketterling of the Palmer Police Department. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks.
You know, we had talked a little bit before this meeting about something that has become has run ahead in some ways of practice, I think, in police departments all across the country, and that's the cultural inculcation almost that everyone understands a thing called Miranda rights or to Mirandize. In fact, my understanding is that term to Mirandize has become part of dictionary definitions. And because people have seen so many, perhaps movies and police procedurals in on TV, that it perhaps has reached the point where people all believe they understand what that means. And I thought it would be a nice thing to begin with by saying, okay, when I did a little bit of research here, I realized it's a very complicated business. Mirandizing, we can talk about that maybe a little bit later.
Sure.
It's different around both the country and around the world. But how about a quick, succinct description of how Mirandizing works in the Palmer Police Department?
Sure. Great topic, and it's actually timely. Miranda is named after Arizona versus Miranda, or correction, actually, Miranda versus Arizona, which was a 1963 robbery case in which a gentleman named Ernesto Miranda was charged and after interrogation confessed to a robbery and then claimed that he was unaware that he had the right to not answer police questions. So the case was originally started in 1963, went to the Supreme Court in February of 66, and then was ultimately decided in June of 66. So, you know, this month, but, you know, quite a few years ago, and ultimately in a 5-4 decision. So it was controversial then. In a 5-4 decision, the U.S. Supremes said that basically no, the police need to advise individuals that they have certain rights under the First and Sixth Amendments prior to any questioning. But there are, as you pointed out, a lot of caveats to that. It's not any questioning. First and foremost, the individual that's being questioned has to be in custody.
Right.
Or what a reasonable person would assume to be in custody. And then we enter into the debate about the reasonable person standard. So, but custody has to be established. A reasonable person would think they are not free to leave. And then they have to be asked questions about the reason for which they are in custody. In other words, pedigree information, who are you, where do you live, does not fall under the scope of Miranda or Miranda warnings. But things like, okay, you're being detained on suspicion of a burglary. Have you been in this area, you know, walking around? Have you been into that home? Those would certainly fall under the caveat of Miranda, and he would need to be advised of his rights before he answers those questions or before you ask those questions. So the warning itself is generally standardized, and it's fairly standard throughout the entire country. Mm-hmm. And that's basically that they have the right to remain silent. They have the right to an attorney. They can have an attorney with them before and during any questioning if they wish. And if they cannot afford one, one be appointed free of charge, and they can decide at any time to exercise those rights and not answer any questions. In other words, they can start answering questions and then stop if they choose. And then there's a waiver. In other words, the individual has to make a waiver of those rights, and the waiver has to be knowing and intelligent. In other words,
right.
If you have an individual that doesn't speak English and you read him his Miranda warnings in English, we're going to run into some problems with any information he might give us. So that would probably be suppressed. So he would need to be Mirandized in whatever language he does understand. Or if you have an individual that is just so impaired by a controlled substance or a legal substance, it doesn't really matter what it is, there could be some issues with making a knowing and intelligent waiver. So in Palmer, The officers are trained to issue the Miranda warning, basically verbatim. Usually they read it off a card. Mm-hmm. And we remind them to do that no matter how long they've been in law enforcement. Read it off the card. It'll just prevent making a simple mistake and maybe getting a confession suppressed. The waiver does not have to be verbatim. And again, this is something that it kind of varies from department to department or even state to state. There are different guidelines, but the waiver does not have to be suppressed. Some departments are very strict. Do you understand each of these rights as I read, read them to you? Yes or no. Having these rights in mind, do you wish to speak to us now? Yes or no. And they will require a yes or no answer. The waiver does not have to be oral. In other words, they don't have to actually say yes or no. And there have been some decisions regarding Miranda that simply silence on the part of the defendant after having been read their rights does not mean the police have to stop questioning. Now a clear, concise, I wish to speak to my attorney, or no, I don't want to answer your questions, and you're done. There will be no more questions following that, unless there's a compelling reason to do that that would get past Miranda. In other words, a safety issue. Okay, I'm not going to talk to you about the crime that, you're in custody for, but, is there something dangerous in this house that could hurt somebody? We're about to search the house, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And there could be some exceptions to that there.
So a couple of things here, a whole set of questions, but the first one is, sure. Is any of this recorded, or how is it noted that the individual in question has said yes or no?
There are a lot of different ways to do that. And again, we've talked about technology and how technology has changed several times, you and I. 20 years ago, a lot of the times Miranda was read off a card in the field. And if the person said, sure, yeah, no problem, I'll talk to you, then the conversation went on. And this is before a lot of police were even issued microcassette recorders, so there was no recording. And then came things like microcassette recorders, where conversations would be recorded, and then dash cams, and now body cams. There are Miranda waiver forms that can be issued out and used in certain circumstances where the individual might actually sign a waiver and says, yes, I do understand these rights and agree to answer questions. That's not obviously appropriate in every case. But certainly in a sit-down interview in a police station, that might very well be something we wish to do. But generally, we found it most practical to record it in some manner, and officers are stressed to do that if they can, just so the proof is actually there that this individual was advised of his Miranda rights and did, in fact, make a knowing and intelligent waiver of them.
And the other aspect of this is perhaps the difference between detaining or having someone be brought to a police station,
sure,
where they may be arrested and interrogated and so on, different from in the field situation.
Sure. Very much so. And now we're getting into the reasonable person standard. Would a reasonable person feel that they are in custody or they are not? And there are some very clear instances where a person would be considered to be in custody. You're sitting in handcuffs in the back of a police car.
Right.
You've been transported by the police to the police station and sat down in an interview room. Okay. Clearly you're now in custody. Whether you've been told you are under arrest or not, is not the deciding factor. It's whether a reasonable person would feel they may leave. So, an example where it's a little more gray is, somebody who is a suspect in a crime is asked to come down to the police department. And they come down on their own. And you ask them questions about the particular crime that they are a suspect in. So they've come down to the police station on their own. They were not under arrest. They didn't have to come to the police station if they didn't want to. But nevertheless, here they are in a police station in an interview room. So is that person in custody or are they not? And there are a number of nuances, some relatively subtle, that the courts have debated. Where is the interrogating officer or the interviewing officer in relation to that person? Are they between that suspect and the door? Have they explained to the suspect, hey, I appreciate you coming down here. You didn't have to do that. It's great. If you don't want to talk to me, you don't have to. And if you want to leave at any time, there's the door. some courts have decided that that's fine. You know, that person is not in custody. And a reasonable person would think that maybe I am a suspect, but I'm not in custody. I can leave. But if the interrogation becomes more accusatory, a little bit heavier, and, you know, you have more than one officer in the room with the individual for perhaps officer safety reasons, now we're really flirting with in custody. And the smart thing to do is to advise them of their Miranda rights.
So what about before that, an encounter on the street somewhere where a discussion ensues between an officer and someone, and they are talking not necessarily with an interrogation sense about a specific crime, and the person reveals something for whatever reason. Perhaps they just feel like talking, and
sure,
and they happen to say things that lead a person to believe that maybe they have been involved in a crime.
Sure, great example. And you know, a very common example could be just an officer contact looking for somebody running around in the neighborhoods acting suspicious, or perhaps even a traffic stop that results in a DUI. Investigatory questions prior to a suspect in custody, being in custody, are not subject to Miranda. In other words, if we get a call about an individual that may have been breaking into homes, and that, you know, they give us the ubiquitous description of, you know, somebody wearing a black hoodie and a ball cap. Okay, well, here's someone in a black hoodie and a ball cap that's in the area. So let's stop and talk to this person. Hey, can you come talk to me for a second? We got a description, you know, of somebody who looks like you that was breaking into houses around here. Can you tell me who you are, what you're doing, that kind of thing? So this is general investigatory stuff. It's not accusing this person of anything yet. It's trying to determine, do we have the right guy or do we not have the right guy? Not subject to Miranda. So once we determine, we start doing things like, okay, maybe we're going to do a show up. Like, we're going to hold the individual there and we're going to bring the witness and drive them past that individual so they can say, yes, that's him, or no, that's not. If they pick him out and identify him as the person that they saw breaking into a house, now it's time to start really thinking very hard about Miranda, because this person is now clearly a suspect and we're going to ask him some difficult questions for him about what he's been doing. So Miranda's probably going to apply. And I think a wise officer would issue it. So
what, we're having this conversation this morning, a fascinating one from my perspective, about, something that has, been viewed as common practice, Mirandizing individuals, through our seeing that being done, not necessarily in reality on the street, but through the lens of many filmmakers' work.
Sure.
And so what I'm, as we're having this conversation with Police Chief Lance Ketterling, we're seeing, I think, the nuance of all of this, that this is not black and white.
You know, we would love it to be. Every officer gets issued a copy of the Constitution of the United States when they join the police department. It's not a large document.
No.
And yet there are volumes upon volumes that would fill libraries about how this document is interpreted and what that actually means. So generally what we tell people is, look, err on the side of caution. We are here to protect rights, not infringe upon them. But getting back to Miranda, it's interesting that it was a controversial decision in 66. It was 5-4. It's still controversial. And there have been attempts, unsuccessful attempts, by various lawmakers to repeal it. And some fairly recently that, look, by now everybody knows they don't have to talk to the police. Do we really need to read them their rights? The bottom line is, I don't think it costs us, and this is just my experience talking, I don't think it costs us many interviews or interrogations. Generally, if it's done in, you know, an appropriate way, and you enter into advising someone of their Miranda rights as you would having any other discussion with somebody, just like you and I are talking now, generally, if someone's going to speak with us, they're going to speak with us no matter what. And if they're not going to talk to us, they're not going to talk to us, regardless of whether they read Miranda or not. And we have plenty of people that the second we contact them on a traffic stop or for whatever reason, we'll decide, I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not going to answer anything. I don't care what this is about. I don't have to speak to you. Mm-hmm. And they're quite right. So
you mentioned earlier the similarity and the use of Miranda around the country. This is a time in the summer in particular where people travel. And so if someone happens to be traveling anywhere, it goes to Texas or Vermont or California or whatever.
Sure.
Pretty much what you have described here will be the way a process would be handled in those states with variations, I understand.
Yeah, and the variations would be really pretty small. In other words, one Miranda card might say lawyer and another one might say attorney.
Okay.
But the reality is the Miranda warning is, for all intents and purposes, a standardized warning pretty much across the country.
Okay. So now, the other thing that does happen, of course, is that people not only travel in the United States, but go sometimes traveling through Canada.
Sure.
Or down to Mexico, not to mention the rest of the world. My understanding is that Canada has a rough equivalent to what we do. Is that your experience, or do you have any sense of that?
Not in a sense enough where I could intelligently comment on it.
Okay.
I think any time a citizen is traveling abroad, it pays to know the local laws, because the U.S. Constitution doesn't afford them a great deal of protection in places where the U.S. Constitution doesn't apply.
Right.
So, you know, they might have some coverage as being a United States citizen, but, you know, if you're traveling in a different country, you're subject to those laws.
Right. And I know there has been considerable, particularly in countries around the world with large shifts in population through immigration patterns. There's been reflections upon how to interrogate people, confront people. And I know that in the EU and in England and a variety of places, there's been a tension on this. I don't have an in-depth knowledge of it, but what I came across was that, yes, this is a worldwide concern. So if you happen to be going to Israel, if you have even, or Bangladesh or wherever,
sure,
there is some attention paid. This has been not just you rightly referenced the Miranda decision, Supreme Court, back in the 1960s. However, this has been an issue worldwide. It's been something that has been of concern to a lot of people, and so they're still dealing with it in the EU, and they're still dealing with it in terms of how to apply it, and in particular, how to apply it under changing circumstances. And I'm thinking, in the normal course of events, Palmer's a fairly low-key environment.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
But you do have changing circumstances where tensions arise or something happens, and then this whole thing becomes a focus of more attention.
Yeah, quite so. And you're right. The world is becoming more and more blurred in terms of boundaries. And so governments are going to have to make those decisions about how they want to handle these changing things. But I think most of them are loath to give up their autonomy in this kind of thing, the EU probably being a notable exception of it. And still, they argue amongst the members about how best to proceed with these types of things.
Sure, right.
So, it's an interesting question. Kind of an academic one from the perspective of the United States at this particular point, because we're adhering to what our Supreme Court eventually says we have to do and what the Constitution says we have to do.
Okay. Well, let's shift from Miranda to Palmer, Alaska. And I noted recently that a member of Palmer's police force came by and introduced himself and left a card as part of the ongoing program of meeting with people, and you describe how that's working today?
Actually, yes, I'd be happy to, and it's working very well. We've done it for the last 3 years, and every year, usually we try to do it in June when the weather warms up so the officers can get out on foot a little bit easier, but we get a list of all the business licenses from City Hall, and we try to hit each one of those, drop off some cards, let them know that we're here in case they want a site inspection to talk about security concerns, or listen to any problems that the business owners might have in terms of what they're seeing in their local area. So it's been very well received, and the officers like it because they get to know the community a little bit better, and that's always good, building those bridges. So it's been an effective program, and we plan on continuing it.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was particularly impressed by being reminded that after-hours contact numbers are available to police departments. So if something is noted in a particular area, they know who to contact.
Yeah, it's vital. Whether it's a simple alarm or there actually has been damage done, just getting a hold of somebody that can come and tell us if anything's missing and maybe secure the structure is very important for our needs.
Okay. So the other thing I always like to talk about and just check up on, you mentioned technology continuing to improve. Any changes in technology? I'm always interested in like the camera thing. Sure. And any other aspects. What's happening technology-wise for the department at the present time?
Technology it's one of those double-edged swords anymore, right? It isn't it? I mean, the body cameras are working great. The officers like them. They collect wonderful evidence. Mm-hmm. And they're an effective tool. The problem is, let's look at tasers for an example. Tasers are an interesting thing. It can be very effective when tasers work. And they don't always work, but when they do, they generally work very well. And what we're finding is that when you purchase a taser, it's several hundred dollar investment, right. Just shy of $1,000 in some cases. And you have this tool which can save lives, and it's good for about 3 or 4 years. And then we have to cycle through and get more tasers. So it's kind of an ongoing expense almost. And you know probably better than I do that technology can be an extremely expensive proposition. Right. And there's certain things that we can't just simply afford to buy, despite how much we would like to have it. So,
okay.
Yeah. The next big thing that I'm seeing that could be coming down the pike in terms of technology is it's not so much the cameras, it's where those cameras might be and who's allowed to use them. And, can the cameras be mobile? Can the cameras be flying? What can the cameras record? What should the cameras record? These kinds of things. What can the cameras be used for? You might use your unmanned aerial vehicle for a search and rescue, but sure. So we're not going to use it for surveillance without a search warrant, that type of thing.
Right.
And these are decisions that sometimes are a long time coming and need to be well thought out so you don't run over somebody's constitutional rights the government, the Alaska constitution right to privacy that everybody has in this state.
Okay. Well, Mike Malevsky here, and I've been talking with Palmer Police Chief Lance Ketterling. And we started out by covering nicely, I think, Miranda and its circumstance at the present time. Any last comments before we finish up?
It is summer, and a lot of people are out walking around. Most of those people are completely pleasant, wonderful people. But Palmer's had some kind of a rash of car break-ins recently, so I just want to remind citizens, lock your car doors, don't leave valuables or firearms in your vehicles overnight. So those are targets, and try not to be one.
Okay. Thank you again, Chief Ketterling.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Mike.